Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On tonight's show, I have a very special guest. Her name is Roberta Glass. She is an ardent true crime observer, and she has a YouTube channel with a bunch of her talks about certain cases, and we're going to talk about them tonight. Roberta, are you there?
Yes.
Awesome. Thanks. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, your YouTube channel is Roberta Glass, all one word, R-O-B-E-R-T-A, Glass. G-L-A-S-S, and you've done some tremendous job on looking at a lot of recent cases, and you and I have been Facebook friends for a while now, and particularly our interests were overlapped with the West Memphis 3, but we also had some news this week. It's March, what is it, the 30th right now? Today is the 30th as we're recording. Was the release or the vacation of the guilty verdict for Adnan Syed, or the serial podcast case that took place in Baltimore, a very famous publicity case. So Roberta's going to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll also talk about some things that are happening now with this other coverage of Damien Nichols in the West Memphis 3, and it ties together with this character, Bob Ruff, who supposedly has an inaptly titled podcast called Truth and Justice, but we can talk about that. So Roberta...
Orwellian titled.
Yes, exactly.
Podcast.
Exactly. It's like the Ministry of Truth or something like that. But before we get started, Roberta, can you talk a little bit about yourself, please?
I am a true crime fan. I was raised in Pennsylvania. My father was a journalist, then became a screenwriter. I was raised Quaker, even though my father was Jewish. And I went to Sarah Lawrence College in New York City. And worked a bit in film for Danny DeVito, for Jersey Films. And then later I moved to magazines where I worked for Oprah. And that's my job there was screening her mail, part of it. And I got a letter from Amanda Knox, family or supporter, and that really sparked my interest in true crime.
Gotcha. And what was the letter about, Amanda? Was it just plea for
help? Well, yeah, it was. Well, some of what I did was I was trained by Gavin DeBecker to look at all kinds of communication for possible threats. I live in fear of saying Oprah's name because I signed a confidentiality notice, and I live in fear of that coming back to haunt me. But so I learned how to look at all this stuff for threats. The ideas Gavin DeBecker had was that there are certain things, markers, language, subject matter that you can look for threats. But with Amanda Knox's friend or family's letter, it was this unbelievably persuasive letter about how it had just happened. She had just been arrested, and the prosecutor was being investigated for being corrupt, and you know, all these details about her case. And I was fascinated by it, and I thought it was a huge miscarriage of justice. And I just started looking into details about the letter, and half of it was completely untrue. Some of it was true. Like, he was being investigated. The prosecutor was. He was eventually exonerated, Manini, but
Manini, yeah, actually,
the other half was completely untrue. And I followed that case for years, mostly with an open mind, but at the end coming to the conclusion that she was guilty.
I thought the same thing as well. But a good liar, and you know, she threw a couple people under the bus. Lumumba, the black guy, the bar owner, right? Didn't she, like, try to put a pin it on him, and she was deceptive. And, yeah, amazing. That's an amazing case, too. And that position is not a popular position.
No, it's not. And a lot of it's being fought out on Twitter, and I think that they're following the McCann people, who have really turned around public opinion just by being relentless about the truth on Twitter and just having an army of people. And the people critical of the, I don't even want to say pro-guilty, but the people who feel that Amanda Knox was rightly convicted the first time in the, you know, three-tier justice system that they had, have been really good about, you know, putting out facts about the case. There's an excellent website. You know, the truth is out there if you want it. It's just, I think it's a complicated case. I think if had I been more versed in true crime, I may have come to the conclusion that she was guilty earlier, but I think there's a lot of emotion injected into that case. And as a woman, they say all these things like she was slut shamed and blah, blah, blah. It just didn't happen. I mean, her interrogation started with cookies and tea. So how brutal was it, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like a lot of these other cases I've studied where there's a PR people involved and there's a lot of chaff, you know, disguising the wheat, so to speak. But yeah, that's an amazing case. There's a picture of Amanda Knox with Damien Eccles. Have you ever seen that picture?
Yes.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
It's perfect.
Yeah. So, and so you, that the beginning for you was the Amanda Knox case, which had tons of fanfare and everything like that. And then how did you progress from there through Adnan Syed and Damien Eccles?
Well, I had an experience. I always kind of was like a true crime follower, but the Amanda Knox case for years was my big, every book I could get about it, anything I could read about it. But then I was in a fire in 2012, and I almost lost my life. I was in the burn unit for 7 weeks. I was in a coma for six of those.
Oh, wow.
And so true crime, when I came out of that experience, I had a lot of therapy with a speech therapist and a lot of time. A lot of amazing people helped me recover. True crime meant something different to me because I guess when I was in a fire, I had the feeling or thought that I was dying. So I felt when I read true crime after that, I could really connect to the victim. So it meant something more than just like a name or face. I had new respect for life and new meaning about what it means to take a life.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, I'm glad you made it through. It's that's some of those fire cases are really traumatic. Yeah, so. So then you had some time to read some true crime books.
Yeah. And when the West Memphis 3 case, that was about a year before, I was happy that they got out because all the information I had about that case was that they were wrongly convicted. I think people forget how small the minority voice was back then. I think it's changed for the better. I think it's gotten it's still way, you know, way uneven,
right.
But it was really hard to find a minority voice. But I think I wanted to look at both sides of the case. The first thing I found, I think, was an interview with you, Dave McGowan, and Ed Opperman,
right,
which is
yeah.
Excellent. I read your book, and I couldn't believe it. I everything I needed to learn about true crime, or everything I think anybody needs to learn about true crime, they can learn through the West Memphis 3 case. Everything about what PR does, what money does, how you convince the public, how you can obscure the facts of a case, you can learn through the West Memphis 3 case.
Agreed. Yeah, those are excellent points. I mean, it's all really there. I mean, I devoted a small chapter in my book to the court of public opinion, but, you know, the court of public opinion can influence these in court cases, like I think Serial is a perfect example, Making of a Murderer, those cases, how that whole series on Netflix garnered this massive you know, outraged that this guy, I can't remember his name, was unjustly convicted. But if you look at the court case, those, there's damning evidence about his involvement. And I can't remember that girl who passed away. But, yeah, so, yeah, that's interesting.
Are you talking about Serial?
No, Serial. What was Making of a Murder? It was the cases that were up.
In Making a Murder, Teresa Halbach.
Teresa Halbach, thank you. Yeah, so I felt like that was another one where there was some deceptive, non-factual investigation into that case. So, anyway.
And can we talk about the similarities between that and Serial?
Yes.
In that they were both made by women to, with an absolutely one-sided account to make a man who brutally murdered a woman look good.
Yeah, it's interesting. What do you think that their motives were to create, an uproar of opinion or just to get attention? What do you think their motives was? It Serial was an NPR case too, right? Wasn't it published
right. through NPR? Well, I have a friend in New York who knows one of the filmmakers of Making a Murderer, and I don't know if I should tell the story, but I will. She's a gay woman, and she knew her at Columbia, and she said that she had a girlfriend who was cheating on her, and every single one of her friends told her her girlfriend was cheating on her, and she just shut down and wouldn't believe it. So I think that applies to how she made Making a Murderer. She dug into the defense with an idea and just denied anything that made him look bad.
Made him culpable. Gotcha. That's interesting.
Yeah, made him culpable. Thank you.
But yeah, but you can make those across the line on the three documentaries for HBO, for the West Memphis 3, Making of Murder and Serial, all have those similarities where they either have an agenda or a preset thing where they're not looking at all the facts, in my opinion.
Well, I think also you have to say that there is no successful podcast or documentary about a true crime case about a rightful conviction. There's just no mystery in that. And there are no awards in that. There's
excellent
no
point.
Prestige, and there's no money in we got the right guy, he was convicted. And I think the left, loves the story that our justice system is terrible and that this is another case of our criminal justice system run amok.
Bungling it, right, yeah. That's a good point. I mean, I think that that's a strong narrative on those West Memphis 3 documentaries, you know, making fun of the Arkansas justice system and the Hicks that are running it. And especially that was part of the PR strategy as well. So, but yeah, so these cases are amazing. Knox, Serial, Making a Murder, West Memphis 3. And this guy, Adnan, just got out of jail or he had the thing vacated. How did you follow the Serial case?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
My sister-in-law mentioned it to me, and she said she wasn't sure. She was listening to it. She wasn't sure what to think, and have a listen. And the first episode I listened to, the minute Adnan came on and started talking, I was like, unfortunately, I had the experience of dealing with grifters, or I don't know what you call it, lowlifes in my life. And he sounded like every lowlife I've ever met, right to the obsession with, you can't prove that I'm lying, you know?
Right.
And Sarah Koenig makes a lot of effort to say how honest he is because he's obsessed with being able to verify what he says. But that's just if we were sitting together and I stole your wallet, right?
Right.
Or your wallet went missing, and it was just two of us in the room. You'd be like, where did my wallet go? I don't know, but you can't prove it was me.
Right.
It's like a low-life move, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So it sounded like a low-life, but I withheld judgment, But I just, my initial impression was like, this is a really naive woman getting taken in by a low-life manipulative scumbag. Then I'm not mincing words here, but that's, I mean, that, I couldn't believe it. I thought, is this like the most naive person ever?
Right. I mean, I kind of got that same feel. I actually couldn't finish the podcast series because I just felt like it was just pretty clear after I read outside of that podcast what had happened, that his accomplice admitted to everything, you know, told the story in detail and got all the facts right. Can't remember his name.
Right, but he was the one everyone said was a liar. And I'm not saying that that guy doesn't lie, but I would trust him more than I would trust Jay more than I would trust Adnan. And the fact that Sarah Koenig never said Haman Lee's, hardly ever brought in Haman Lee, didn't, you know, give an episode to her, just didn't deal with her at all and minimized her and said, oh, she was just sort of like, her journal is sort of like a 16-year-old, typical 16-year-old girl. And that, and what I thought the message was to the audience was, Adnan is extraordinary. Haman Lee was just ordinary. So it's no big deal that she was murdered. I was so enraged by that podcast that that's why I started. I mean, that was the idea when I started recording my podcast. I really just wanted, I was so shocked that no one had recorded anything about this. Nobody, I know Anne Brocklehurst, who's wonderful, had written some really good articles about it, but hardly anybody was talking. And the people at The Intercept nearly lost their jobs just trying to show the other side.
Really? I wasn't aware of that. What writer? Yeah. Was it Green? Wasn't him. Who were the writers? Do you recollect?
Oh, I don't off the top of my head.
So what happened? They wrote something.
But
something
he did write an essay about it that I can send to you about how he went up against the powers that be at The Intercept over that.
Interesting.
They did like two big interviews with, I think one big interview with Jay and maybe two with the prosecutor.
Interesting. I wasn't aware of that. Wow. Yeah. I mean, I guess those are the same case. I mean, it's tough to take the state's position, you know, the prosecutor's position on all these cases. So I guess that's another example of that. And that kind of ties in, the serial case also ties into Bob Ruff, who's currently, for people who don't know, is doing a long, extremely drawn out, so-called investigation of the West Memphis 3 case that is, he bounces all over the place, you know, and sometimes...
I hear he's going to be investigating the source of the Beverly Hills 90210 music next.
Probably we're going to head, right? Because that's in this case, it was something, it was the 90210 show that had that...
How was it composed?
That proved everything.
Who were the musicians? Maybe some few interviews of them.
Oh Lord, yeah, that's just craziness. So anyway, he's doing a lot, and he cut his teeth on the serial case of doing a podcast on there that apparently got him a bunch of attention, and he says that, and this is what I found out recently on Reddit, is that his alibi that proves that Adnan didn't do it was based upon the receipts at a store that didn't exist, right? Isn't that what that people investigated and found out?
Right.
So
right.
So
for the Lens Crafters.
Yeah, right? The Lens Crafters alibi. So can you talk a little bit, are you familiar with that or did you read that?
I did read that. He lied. That's not I think it's the He also, what I think is, okay, can we, before we talk about Bob Ruff, can we talk about what the state of the world is?
Yes.
That we have a guy who made his bones on solved cases?
Yes, we can talk about that.
he solves solved cases. Where there's a solved case, where there's a conviction, he's there to investigate it.
To investigate it, right. I mean,
with no credentials, but just, I mean, you know, I'm a critic. I sit back from the sidelines, you know. Himself in the role of an investigator. I just think it's absurd. Well, he has West Memphis 3 are twice convicted.
Right.
As you point out so many times, a legal rarity. They pled guilty.
Yeah.
that he's gonna figure out who it's got to be somebody else, right?
Right, the unsub, right? The unknown subject. But and the interesting thing is he's already taken. So like one of the more recent so-called perpetrators was, it was not Byers, but what's his name? What was the story that were three guys having homosexual relationships, or four guys, and that was
they Hobbs. Yeah, that's Terry Hobbs. It's like a family secret type thing.
Or Hobbs family secret, but who was Hobbs' friend? What was his name? Is it Zachary?
Darn.
But you know, he's already said that he's an honorable man. Anyway, Bob
Jacoby?
Jacoby. So he says Jacoby couldn't do it. So he's kind of like already in his mind taken him out of the possible perp thing. But Bob Ruff is involving himself very deeply in the individuals of this case. He's already been seen talking to Eccles. He has traveled to go talk to Jason Baldwin. I believe he's talked to Miss Kelly. So he's definitely not having an objective analysis of this case in any way, shape, or form.
And I don't want to get off topic like I have been, but
it's okay.
Sarah Koenig said that she was doing an objective investigation into Adnan's case, but there is a letter from her to Rabia, who was Adnan's advocate,
right,
saying that she would not record serial or produce serial unless she believed he was innocent.
Wow.
So it's not unusual to present it like they're objective and they don't have an opinion and have a strong opinion and are really making an advocacy piece.
Well, that's an excellent point because somebody went back, I think it was one of these West Memphis 3 researchers, Fred Walsh, who caught Bob Ruff writing on one thread that he was hoping for an exoneration. And I think that this was written last year, so 2017. So he already had this view that...
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, that he has an outcome. And he also, in his blurb for the show, says, you know, there's these three guys convicted for a crime they didn't commit, which is right out of, you know, the PR team's handle. So, yeah, so he's already been caught saying this.
I think he lost a lot of credibility with the Reddit. I mean, you can't put anything past the Reddit people. I really enjoy Reddit.
Oh, they're smart. Sure.
Because there's really a debate that goes on and people tend to back up their opinions with, you know, a source material, or they point some, you know, they point you somewhere, you know.
Right.
But when he started lying about the LensCrafter story, the Reddit community caught him. And when he concluded that this boyfriend of Heyman Lee's Don was really the real killer, he really lost credibility with most of the, I can't say most, I don't know what percent, but at least some percent of the Redditors, that it was just ridiculous, that he couldn't back it up. He had to conclude something. He picked Don because it had to be not Anon. Because Anon, He said himself that he related to Adnan, or he identified with him, and he seems to identify with Eccles too. Yeah. So I have meditated on the thought that maybe, you know, with women you have hebristophilia.
Right.
With maybe he has some kind of love of murderers or envy of murderers. He's certainly sitting on a ton of anger. Did you listen to episode 122?
I did. He was very vociferous about, you know, making his statements. I did listen to that.
I thought that was so interesting because I felt like the mask slipped. You know, all these, it's not like he comes out and says, I'm doing an advocacy piece or I want to exonerate these guys. It's always, I'm looking at both sides. I'm looking at the minutia. All he does is look at the minutia.
Oh.
Because anything like six confessions from Miss Kelly, he's not going to do an episode about that. None of the really important evidence is he's going to really examine. Yeah. He's always going to point everybody elsewhere. That's why I called him Sideshow Bob. But
that's a good nickname.
Yeah, but I don't know. I lost my train of thought.
No, it's okay because I was going to read this
122 episode.
Yeah,
he's always like with this really, really calm voice, and there's this inner, debate with Anne Brocklehurst where he's mansplaining his position to her, you know, with his soft voice. And 122, it's like all that anger that I feel like he's sitting on. Normally just came up and showed itself, and I was like, oh, there it is. There, that's what's under all this.
Under all this.
Like, so, just tremendous anger and aggression.
So this is what he wrote on his Truth and Justice October 18th, 2017. So he says, Truth and Justice is less than 3 weeks away from taking on a new case. This may be our biggest challenge yet. For 24 years, For 24 years, the murders of Stevie Branch, Michael Moore, and Christopher Byers remained unsolved. No. Three.
Except it's
no,
not.
I'm reading this. I'm not making this up. Three men continue to struggle through life as convicted murderers for crimes they did not commit. Hashtag West Memphis 3.
Yeah, they're struggling so much that they're looking for the real killer in Johnny Depp's, you know, Colorado ski lounge.
Yeah, they went down to New Zealand with Peter Jackson to see his filming of the
real killer.
Lord of the Rings. The killer was down there in the cast.
Remember we got to talk about the PR event when they got released.
Oh,
they
let's do that. But let me just read something else too. What I was talking about Fred Walsh. This is what screenshotted and sent to me. And this is Bob Ruff. Quote, when I take on a case, I start from scratch. Everyone starts with a presumption of innocence, and we reinvestigate from the very begin, period. I don't know what that word is. For me, it is a cold case. I have to look at it that way. An unsolved case, period. If I thought everyone got it right, resulting in the case being closed, I wouldn't take the case to begin with. Response, that's fair. I considered that might be the case. I wasn't sure. And then Brooke Simons writes, does that mean you expect it to be reopened and justice served? Is that the purpose? Bob Ruff, that's the hope. So he's gunning for reopen exoneration. I don't know the date of that, but that's an incredible admission for somebody saying, we just haven't gotten to the end yet. So
he wasn't sure, though.
No, yeah.
He wasn't sure.
Not saying that.
He's devoting all this time, but he's still not sure.
Not sure, but
that, he wouldn't do it if he wasn't sure. He's not sure.
This last one where he said, I was surprised at how strong his alibi is with the seven people. I was like, are you out of your mind, dude? This is so crazy. And you want to
really
talk
about. He's deserving of being mocked.
Yeah, he's
cute.
I mean,
polite in America. He should be openly mocked.
Yeah, somebody asked me, why aren't you responding? And I just said, this guy is giving enough rope to hang him, you know, over and over and over again forever. I mean, it's just so much material there. He just keeps going and going and going. Like, hey, man, you know, you might want to pull back, but I don't think he's going to. So I think somebody's going to, I mean, people are starting to critique him already. So I think he's in real trouble. I'm serious. I think that the guy.
When he started one, he goes, my listeners want me to look back again at Damien Eccles.
Oh my God.
That's what he said. He started one. They wanted me to re-look at that guy who pled guilty, who lies about his case constantly. I mean, what are the chances that three guys, two of them would fail a lie detector, whatever you think about lie detectors,
right.
All three of them would have no alibis. Three innocent guys on the same day have no alibis.
Well, that's,
but that's also something that started with cereal, is that it's just like normal not to remember where you were. We all live in a sort of amnesiac state,
right?
When like our lives are on the line.
Yeah, he had to come. He had to wait 3 days for his mom to come up with an alibi, right? So, I mean, that was another thing that you could just have a quick question to during this last podcast. Like, okay, the 7th, no alibi. 10th, we got one. I got 7 people. And Eccles also has 2 different alibis because he's either over at the friend's house or on the phone. It can't be both. So he has a very.
That's what I thought.
He has 2 different alibis, but he just uses them in different environments. Which one is it? Were you over at your parents' friend's house, or were you on the phone? And all those phone alibis are—they just all fell through. It's all sad. And on the stand, they asked him about stuff that he knew about the case. Where'd you getting it? Wasn't in the newspaper. He says, "Well, yeah, I'm just making it up. I was just making." I mean, he's caught in all kinds of lies. Anyway.
Yeah, he was caught on the stand moving the time.
I mean,
I was just reading Eccles, you know, and I think there's a brilliance of Bob Ruff. You know, Bob Ruff says, you know, admits in one episode that he's not too bright. And when people make disparaging remarks about themselves, you know, my ears prick up, tend to listen. But he is brilliant at just piling on the minutia so that you feel like you don't know the case anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
You're like, what case are we talking about? I'm like, the McStays? Or, you know, that is this dog catcher a central figure in this case? And I didn't realize it? Like,
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's really brilliant because everybody's afraid to speak because they'll feel like they'll be embarrassed because his details and the minutiae are so amazing that he will shut you down with, you know, whatever.
I know exactly where this is. You know, I was there. Did you see the pictures of him with the pig in the water?
He said very confidently to the Reddit crowd, well, no, you don't understand the situation with the lens crafters. It was closed, and then it moved, and then and the people that did know what was going on were like, no, that's just straight up a lie.
Yeah, didn't he say that, like, he talked to people even after the place moved because they went to another lens crafters that he called? Like, he had some kind of, graphic... end around to try to explain everything. Didn't make sense. This Bob Ruff Truth and Justice is it's incredible.
But, I mean, it's popular. I can't believe it.
Yeah,
and people come on. I mean, you know, I have a tiny little, you know, podcast, but people come on all the time angry with me about the West Memphis 3.
In what way?
You know, they don't have anything to back up their opinion. Mostly it's about how I should just shut my mouth.
Interesting.
And not talk. But I think that's just being...
Well, I had... Somebody took one of my posts that I posted on Facebook and post-pasted it into his thread, and hordes of his followers came after me and were insulting me. I got threatened by one. And, you know, I was like, what's going on? Don't you understand what I wrote? And I posted all my videos.
They called you mostly like a crazy Christian.
Crazy Christian, loopy. They put all these GIFs on there like I was crazy. And, you know, I'm like, all I do is write and tell facts. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, yeah, so that was, but you know how much he makes per
month? How many footnotes are in your book? I mean, it's quite footnoted.
I'm at least 350 or 400 in that book. I heavily footnote all my books, actually. So I know, I mean, and those are all go back to the case files and all these cases. But the... he makes $1,600 a month just from Patreon. So he has enough people following him to support him in that way. And, you know, he probably gets all these other revenue streams. So he's got a sizable, like you said, he's got a sizable, popular podcast.
I know. And people like accuse people, I guess they call guilters. Huh. There is no pleasure in having this opinion.
I agree.
You know, if you are a pro-innocence person, there's a lot of action, you know, maybe, you know, court cases coming up. Maybe you'll break him out of prison, you know, perhaps celebrities, you know, money, high profile documentaries. There is no pleasure in having this position.
Yeah, I can attest to that. No question.
Yeah, I mean, really, especially you. I mean, I don't think people realize how much grief you get, you know, people get put, especially you.
Me or Trent Reynolds.
West Memphis 3 guilt people.
Yeah, yeah. It's sometimes you feel like you're putting your hands up to stop a tsunami, you know? It just comes over you. You just can't even stop. Like, come on. I have a book. Read my book. Oh, no, I'm convinced, you know? Jesse Miscalli's 12-hour confession. He was tortured, you know, all this stuff. It just doesn't make sense.
Bob Ruff keeps referring to it as one confession. One.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. One of the interesting things is one of his supporters, which I was trying to lead to on the Patreon, one of his supporters is Damien Eccles. So Damien Eccles, the subject of his podcast that's supposed to be objective, I assume, is a guy convicted child killer. So,
because you know Damien Eccles doesn't give to anything that doesn't benefit him.
Well, right.
That was the greatest find out of his letters. I mean, one of them was where he wrote, I'm no longer going to give any energy to anything that doesn't benefit myself.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That is a paraphrase, but you know what I mean? Yeah, it's all about me and making money and F everybody else.
Well, it's amazing because there's all of those statements that he wrote in his disability thing. I'm a sociopath. Was that where he wrote it?
I'm a sociopath, yeah. And I'm homicidal.
Yeah, I'm a homicidal.
In his own handwriting and into his caretakers in the mental hospital.
But we can rationalize that away by, he's just a troubled kid, just like a normal troubled teenager.
Let's profile Terry Hobbs. That's the profile that Bob Ruff wants to do. Yeah. He wants to ignore Damien Eccles' psychological profile.
500 pages.
Killing cats with firecrackers and, beating a dog to death.
Right, the Great Dane.
Starting fires. Yeah. He's on a drug. I've often wondered about bedwetting because empiramine is a bedwetting drug in addition to being an early antidepressant.
Right.
He's on that. His own parents are afraid he's going to hurt kids.
Right.
But let's look at Terry Hobbs. He might have, I don't know what.
The hair tells the story. The hair's there. DNA. CSI.
The hair matches.
The one hair remains everything. It doesn't matter. You know? I could leave a hair at my bank, and if it gets robbed, I could go to jail because the public would think, hey, he's got a piece of his hair. I mean, it's ridiculous stuff. Anyway. Anything else you want to talk about the West Memphis 3? What are the titles of your stuff? It's Sideshow Bob Ruff and the West Memphis 3. Who are the other ones? West Memphis 3 case solved. So that's the Bob Ruff's got it.
Yeah, I was hoping I'd call it that so I'd get people, I wasn't just preaching to the converted,
Right. And then the Cult of Damien Eccles, which is a proper term. I mean, he's a member of the OTO, so he's in the cult.
Yeah, I think he has a cult leader personality.
Yeah, I mean, and that's actually what Fogelman said in his summation, was that this guy's like Charles Manson. Get a clue. Do you ever listen to
I actually like Charles Manson. I mean, not that I like him, but I find him, I warm to him more. I mean, Damien, I think at least he had a little bit more creativity than Damien Eccles.
Did you ever listen to the Fogelman summation?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyone.
I think also a lot of what comes up in the West Memphis 3 is on the PR side is anti-Christian. I mean, I don't have the gift of faith, but I'm respectful of people who do. Anti-Christian and anti-Southerners. I mean, in America, I believe we're still fighting the Civil War, and it's okay to just call them all dumb hicks, And that goes along with the PR line, they didn't understand Damien Eccles' eccentricities and high IQ because they were all a bunch of dumb hicks.
Right, and I think that also fits into the three documentaries, You've got these Los Angeles... West Coast types looking down on Arkansas, and it's a lot easier to kind of caricature them, I think. And some of the clippings and some of the way that Berlinger and Sinofsky edited stuff, I think was intentionally to make, at least there's one edit with Burnett where he's pissed, you know, and I think that they were strategic in making them look bad during that documentary, at least the first one.
Can we talk about the PR conference when the West Memphis 3 got out?
Yes.
Have you watched that? I just watched that recently.
I've watched it over and over. Well, just to go
they
back, because when you,
them.
Yeah, just one
thing. Applauding child killers.
Oh yeah, it's incredible.
Who just pled guilty. And if you read the confessions, they're really hard to stomach. I mean, they make me cry. Jesse Miss Kelly's confessions. They're so, especially Baldwin, is so cruel, yeah. Needlessly cruel, and brutal to these kids. And here are these educated people just applauding these child killers.
And it shows that their PR was one of their, you know, one of their strategies was this PR. When they go through and they had that public, you know, statement of case where John Douglas gets up there and talks, they were very clever because they did that whole PR thing in a courtroom and with the background of a judge's table. So it conveyed kind of to the general populace that they were in this courtroom, which they could have ended up going to court and then showed their so-called evidence. But the PR strategy of getting in the court with Reardon, Douglas, and them chatting was really remarkable. And some people don't key into that. You know, they don't see that PR. They think that that's actually legit. Bob Ruff thinks John Douglas is, you know, the greatest person on earth, which, and also he talks up Spitz too, which is really crazy. These guys.
Do you know what Dominic Dunn called the experts that come into high profile crime cases? He called them whores of the court.
It's accurate. So accurate. I mean, that somebody.
So I think, like, when I think of Jim Clemente and John Douglas, who were, you know, sort of hired to do PR and lie, because all you can do when the facts are against you is lie.
Right.
You know?
Or pay somebody lie to do
or
it
withhold,
for you.
Lie and withhold them. And point elsewhere. That's basically the technique that they all use.
It's just incredible. You know, Bob Ruff, I saw a picture of him. He's hanging out with the guys at Real Crime Profile, Clemente, and these other ones. And they got it wrong, too. True Crime Garbage, True Crime Garage, Real
Crime. Oh, I couldn't listen to that one. Yeah. I just couldn't stomach it.
That was a tough one, too. I think they mentioned my name in there or something. I don't know, whatever. But, yeah, Clemente's, it's just sad. You know, you've done other cases. You talked about JonBenet, Michael Peterson, Tonya Harding. What are your thoughts on the JonBenet case?
Well, what's interesting about the JonBenet case is that people who believe it's a kidnapping believe everything about what the parents say they did that night, everything except what's in the note. So none of the people believe that it was a foreign faction.
Right.
That's busting out words like countermeasures and attaché and hence, you know,
right. Yeah.
Foreigners. So that's what I find very interesting is that the note is the center to that piece. And I think that actually Jim Clemente comes. It's interesting how the true crime world is its own world. And Jim Clemente comes up again and right. He's. Pointing the finger at Burke.
Right.
And I'm not really buying that. And the reason I'm not buying that is I don't think there's ever been another case where parents have staged an elaborate scene mm-hmm. to point the fingers away from their child who's a murderer.
Interesting. So what's your position? What's the...
I think it's probably one of the parents.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't think it... I read the book... called The Foreign Faction, all about how it's Burke and he had trouble and blah, blah, blah. I think pedophilia or incest is central in that case. I don't think we want to talk about incest in this country.
Right.
And so it makes everybody feel relaxed to say it was just the bad seed brother.
Well, didn't Cyril Weck say that if somebody had done a like medical exam on JonBenet, the dad would have gone to jail if she was still alive?
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, she had all the signs of being molested in the last, I think in the last, I don't want to say the, I don't want to be inaccurate, but I believe it was in the last 48 hours to check that.
Interesting.
So recently. And she had also had frequent urinary tract infections. She also bed wet, which is also a frequent thing. Children who have been, who are molested. And it just, to me, nobody wants to think that parents who speak well, who are successful, would be molesting their children. It's all an image game, just like Amanda Knox was, you know, sold as the girl next door. Damien Eccles was sold as the outsider. The misfit, you know.
Right.
These are kind of it sold as, like, you know, parents who cared for their kids, and maybe they did, but there's definitely some dysfunction and some really dark stuff going on.
Dark stuff, yeah, really dark. Yeah, that case. And Clemente, I think, is getting sued by Burke, right? Aren't they? Isn't there some kind of lawsuit, if I remember correctly?
Yeah. Yeah, Burke is suing them.
But Burke was doing...
He doesn't have a case, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Burke is doing some weird stuff, too. So maybe he was also...
Yeah, I mean, he's weird. The family is weird.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to say that Burke did all that molestation and that it, you know... I people have left me comments and they say, oh yeah, I know tons of cases where the parents have covered up for their kids. Because these are, in my opinion, these are really narcissistic parents who care about themselves. They're not on TV talking about Burke or son. They're talking about themselves.
Themselves, right.
They barely mention, you know, JonBenet's name. They're interested in themselves and saving themselves, not saving their kid. They're going to risk prison to save their kid. Yeah, and also, you know, there's a lot of physical evidence that connects, at least, you know, that the mother, her coat on the fibers on the duct tape that was used on JonBenet's mouth, you know, things like that.
That she was involved in the cover-up.
Yeah, involved in it.
Yeah, that's...
Involved in it. And her handwriting, if you've listened to the handwriting, you know, Tricia Griffith has done a tremendous podcast about this, where she interviews the handwriting analysis that they discredited in this really shady way. And I think she had over 200, it may be more, similarities of Patsy's handwriting,
right,
and the note. But now that they've discredited, they went to a judge with all this wrong information to say that she didn't have the credentials, which she did. But now every time they talk about, I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. I'll remember it as soon as I get off the phone. But they have to say, well, she's been discredited.
Right.
Every time she's, you know, interviewed, or they bring up her evidence, which is, you just look at it and you can see that how similar they are.
But it's her handwriting. I've always thought it was Patsy Ramsey's handwriting, you know, and her style and the weird words and stuff like that. How would she know the bonus, yeah, right? The wife would know.
And hence was in a Christmas card. But
right,
it is probably one of the most fascinating true crime cases, because even if we knew the who, we don't, you know, it's also the why.
The why, yeah. Like, there's just weird stuff going on inside that family, the family dynamic. It's just crazy. I mean, I think that JonBenet died being, or supposedly got hit with the flashlight, right?
Right.
Right. So, like, there might have been some kind of pattern of, like, not just sexual abuse, but physical abuse. And then it just went over the edge.
Well, Cyril Weck feels like that the strangulation was some kind of sex play. I don't know if he sold me completely on that. It's an interesting theory, you know.
Cyril Weck, I cover Cyril Weck twice because he was involved in two cases for my movie, Smiley Face Killers. So he's still around. He's in Pittsburgh. He's involved.
Smart guy.
Yeah, really smart. Smart law degree and medical degree. That's heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk? What are your thoughts? Did you watch iTonya?
iTonya?
Yeah. Did you?
Oh,
see the movie? So, what are your thoughts?
Actually, my brother, my older brother, asked me to do that podcast. I saw iTonya, and it's the only time in a movie theater that I've actually talked out loud at the screen. Back at the screen. I didn't mean to, but when she did that speech about how America had become her abuser. I just felt it was too much. And I was like, oh, come on. You know, I don't know exactly what I said, but I just couldn't believe it. I just felt it was, they're making a hero out of someone who just constantly lies.
All right.
And, you know, I think one of my big issues with Damien Echols or Adnan Syed or Tonya Harding is that they prolong the suffering of everybody and their own suffering because they can't admit to what they did and let everybody heal and move on and do the time. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's absolutely. That's an excellent point. I mean, they really look at this whole drawn out West Memphis 3. We're at 25 years. Still people are fighting and suffering and talking about it. A case that's been solved, you know, so. It's crazy.
And the Moore family, I mean, the pain of, I mean, you know, the pain that they're going through, and these movies are getting nominated. And when I saw that Adnan Syed is getting a new trial, which I don't think that the prosecution will want to try that case. I think he will get an Alford plea because Rabia, his advocate, based her idea for Serial on the West Memphis 3 case.
I didn't know that.
So. It follows very closely that trajectory. And so I just think that it just goes, the pain, suffering, when people are on Reddit saying, we won, isn't it great, woohoo. I wonder if they've experienced loss or suffering, and they know that they're really celebrating a murderer and a loss of a life, a senseless loss.
And that's kind of what gets lost in a lot of these stories is the victim, right? Like you said earlier, especially in the Serial case. Well, I think that's great. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to kind of wrap it up. What else do you want to
say?
I just think that that's a great kind of bookend to our hour-long conversation right there. But so I get people over to your YouTube channel. It is Roberta Glass, all one word, Roberta Glass. I highly recommend all of these podcasts that you've done on a variety of subjects, particularly the West Memphis 3. And you're also on Facebook and do a lot of posts there, or some posts, at least we used to. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, this has been a real pleasure talking about this stuff.
Yeah, likewise. You have great insights into all these cases. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share your information with the audience. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're done. That's it. I'm just going to edit that out. I'm going to actually put it together and then...
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.